Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Times of Your Life on 101.3 and 1240 WJTN Jamestown. I'm Andrew Hill.
I'm Russ Dietrich.
And Russ, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to everybody.
My gosh, I mean, Russ and I have not seen each other for quite some time, but I promised the audience last week that we had a series of new programs coming up, and the promise is here, so here we are, live and in living color, right?
Amen.
All right. Well, Russ, we're not going to waste any time because we have multiple guests in the studio today. This time of the year, it's kind of become a tradition, and we're totally fine with that because the heartbeat of this community is a couple things, and one of those big pulses is local sports, Russ.
Amen.
And we have such a blessed opportunity here to talk to some of the biggest names when it comes to sports locally. And right now, one of the guys who kind of brings it all together when it comes to recognizing the sports community is Randy Anderson from the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame. Randy, welcome back to the Times of Your Life.
Thanks, Andrew. Good morning to you, Russ.
Good morning.
And Randy, you were able to bring together two prized possessions of the sports community here. So I guess I'm going to turn things over to you for a little bit and introduce our guests today.
Well, I'm fortunate to have in the studio with us this morning two of the class of 2023 inductees that will be enshrining on President's Day, Monday, February 20th. So this morning I brought Scott Kinberg and Jay Sirianni.
And we are so lucky to have both these guys in the studio at the same time. Scott, first off, a good morning to you.
Good morning.
This is not your first appearance in the Times of Your Life. Certainly not going to be the last, because when it comes to sports, you know, there's not many people we can say, you know, have the ability to have that memory of almost every single sports play that's happened in recent memory, but also has the ability to, you know, engage with our audience and relate. And we welcome you here. And congratulations on being inducted this year to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, thank you. It's very humbling. It also makes me realize that I'm getting old because the class, there's 11 of us that will be inducted, including my good friend here, Jay. But I remember Jay when he was playing at Southwestern High School. And of the inductees, there's 10 of us. Nine of them I have written about, and I got to know the one I hadn't written about, Bob Barlett from Dunkirk. I got to meet him about a month ago when he was inducted into the Section 6 Hall of Fame. So when we gather on the 20th, I will know every single person in that induction class, and that to me is the thing I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, it really is. It's amazing, and we can tell. I mean, when you tell that story and you tell people, you say it with such enthusiasm and the smile as you do, because it's just a really cool. We were talking before we got on the air here. You're supposed to find a job you love, and the rest mm-hmm. falls in place. And you, I mean, are just it's full circle for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be March 9th. Will be 40 years.
Wow.
And if I do the math, maybe Randy has the exact math, but between my predecessors, Frank Hyde and Jim Riggs, who are rightfully so in our Hall of Fame, I think there's been three sports editors at the Post-Journal since 1945.
God bless the Post-Journal mm-hmm. for committing, you know, to the sports. I mean, we know things in media have changed so much, especially when it comes to print journalism. And, you know, I mean, God bless the owners of the Post-Journal for letting you guys do what you do best. Yep. And that's to focus on, you know, the sports world locally.
Well, it has to be anymore.
Oh, Scott.
Yes.
You said 40-some years. You're starting to cover second and maybe third generations.
Mm. Well, Jay's daughter's on the Southwestern varsity basketball team, and his son and youngest daughter, I'm sure, will be following suit. So we'll see how long I'm still doing it. But this is second generation for a lot of them.
And Scott, you've written extensively about Jay's father, Fran, and his two brothers as well. You are into the third generation of the Sirianis.
I believe you are the official historian of the Sirianni family. The amount of coverage you have given us is remarkable.
They make it easy. Yeah, you guys, your family's made it easy. And although Fran coached at Southwestern in my first few years at the paper, and one of the first games that I ever covered was Southwestern football, and it was against Faulkner back in the early 80s. So, yeah, I mean, that's how I remember when this guy was running around. I have a memory of I was at Allen Park for one of the summer concerts there at the band shell, and I think it was Jay that was running around. I mean, he couldn't have been more than, you know, 6-8 years old. And that's, you know, that's my earliest memory of Jay.
I was obviously behaving.
Well, I think you were looking for tackling dummies, but they didn't have any at the band show.
Probably. You know, if I do the math correctly, right, you said 40 years. So, yeah, I was probably like a manager running around on the sidelines, probably getting in the way and this and that. But we were always there at games and at practices because my dad always took us. But what's weird now is that your son – like, is my boss because he's the vice principal at Southwestern.
Now you're really making me feel.
Now you're into the second. Yeah. You're into the next generation of Kinbergs.
So it just but around area, like everybody knows everybody, right? And that's what makes this such a special area. Mm-hmm. You know, you have pretty much archived. Like you're I say historian of the Syrians, but. You are the historian of all of these people that are getting into the Hall of Fame. Like, I was thinking about that. I'm looking at the names. I'm like, man, Scott wrote about all of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty cool that you're getting in, and at the same time, all of these guys are getting in.
Well, it's probably made Randy's life a little easier too. All he has to do is look back in the post journal history to get all the stats and figures to put all this together.
Well, Randy provided me with a brochure that is available at the Hall of Fame, and it lists all the inductees. Minus this year's group. And I counted, I think it was just, I didn't have any documentation to confirm it, but I think I counted like 164 of the enshrined inductees that I recall writing about.
Wow.
Yeah, so that, what is the total, Randy?
This year's class, I think it's 230.
Yeah.
Wow. And you've written about 164 of them. Your percentage is pretty good, Scott.
Yeah. Scott, you cover the sports and the plays and the players and the coaches and managers, but you also have a very true and a very general word for the officials too, the referees and the umpires.
Oh yeah. Many of whom are in our Hall of Fame. Without the officials, as Jay will tell you, as the Section 6 football chairman, you know, there's no games. Mm-hmm. As much as, you know, we like to root for our teams, the reality is if, and really there's still a shortage in all high school sports. Mm-hmm. And we need to encourage the younger generation to get involved, because I know friends of mine that are basketball officials, for example, and they work pretty much every day and sometimes do double headers on the same day. Mm-hmm. So, to your point, Russ, yeah, I mean, I applaud those men and women who officiate in all sports, because if there's no officials, the kids won't be able to play.
Yeah, well, when we get to the next round of table, I have a question for the next guy you're going to introduce.
Okay.
Well, let's do that officially. Jay Suriani, welcome to the Times of Your Life. We know you are a busy guy, so we're very happy and blessed to be able to get you for a few minutes here. There's a bunch of questions, of course, we want to ask, and it has very little to do with your brother this week. But no, we do want to welcome you here. And first thing I want to ask you is, what were you doing, and how did you find out that you were being inducted into the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame this year?
Well, thanks for having me on. You know, I found out about it at the meeting where they, you know, I'm on the board of directors, as is Scott. And I think we both found out about it when we showed up to that meeting where they announced the class. And it was, you know, to be in there with, you know, about 30 directors who are all invested in Chautauqua sports. It was pretty humbling to get that news. And then you just start thinking about, man, I just thought about all the people that got me to that point, you know, because as a coach, I got in as a coach. I didn't get in as an athlete, as Scott could tell you, because he did, you know, watch me play as an athlete. Definitely got in as my coaching and not as my playing.
He's being too humble.
And as a coach, you know, it's not about you as a coach. It's about everybody else. It's about the assistant coach. It's about the players. You know, so that's what I started to think about, is all the great coaches that I coached with, all the great players that I played with, and how, you know, they're the reasons why we had success at Southwestern. So it's awesome being, you know, thought of, you know, by the Hall of Fame to be Hall of Fame worthy, right? I mean, that's pretty incredible. And then just sitting in here right now with a wealth of knowledge about Chautauqua sports history in general is just unbelievable. So we got something really special, really great going at the Hall of Fame. And I'm really, really honored just to be part of that as a director. And now just, I can't even describe, just being inducted is just unbelievable.
What is it about, you know, Chautauqua County and the local sports community? I mean, we always joke it's something in the water. It's, you know, something, you know, just weird going on in this part of the world where we have these, you know, sports teams that continue to show to championship levels. I mean, it's almost anticipated every single year that we're going to have a team go to states in any of the sports, and not just the major ones. I mean, everything from, you know, cross country to swimming to wrestling. I mean, and you, of course, point to it as the coaching, but it's got to be something else, right?
I think it's passion. You know, I think it's passion for athletics and for sports. I mean, I think sometimes we get focused on all the negativity that goes around with youth sports and sports in general. But I think there's a lot of positive things around here. I think there are a lot of really good coaches through all sports in Chautauqua County, from the youth programs all the way up. You know, I just off the top of my head, thinking about Tom Langworthy, you know, Ben Drake, you know, there's a reason why they're consistently successful year in, year out. You know, Maple Grove cross country, you know, Southwestern, you know, track. I mean, look at the coaching, look at the consistency in the coaching, and then look at, you know, the community and how the community supports it. So I think that's that you see that in that, you know, throughout the county.
It's a great answer because, I mean, you can't, you know, go against that answer because it makes sense. When you have a sports Hall of Fame in your own community that has, you know, we're not just trying to fill this wall, Randy. I mean, it's not, you know, just let's pick somebody out of a hat and, you know, grow something. When you go to other parts, which I know the other parts of the world and country that don't have this, that would love to have something like this. It's not like they're just, you know, creating a museum, you know, to honor people. This is a true collection of athletic minds and passionate people.
We are one of the very few counties in all of New York State that has an active, living, breathing Hall of Fame with a physical presence. Mm-hmm. We're just not a website that somebody can look up stuff on. We're an active, living, breathing, walk in the door, learn what you want to learn. And very few counties in New York State have what we have. And Jay alluded to it a little while ago. It's because of the 30 people that we have on our board of directors. We're all volunteers. We have no paid employees. So everybody is all in on what we're doing. And it takes that many people to do the stuff we do. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank Russ Dietrich for having the vision for the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame way back in 1981. This is our 41st year. And Russ is the guy, along with Scott's predecessor, Jim Riggs, Tony Miliato, and a lot of the other sports enthusiasts that were living in the county at that time that started this Hall of Fame. So, Russ, my good friend, thank you for what you had a vision for.
I was just a member of the team.
Well, that's what it's about, you know, teamwork. And I know, like you said, Randy, there's a bunch of people that make these decisions. And, you know, we don't want to focus on the background because I think our audience has a pretty solid understanding. We definitely want to give airtime to, you know, the folks here. But really quickly, I mean, how many people are waiting in the wings? I mean, the submissions you guys get, I mean, every year it's like, hey, you know, somebody must walk up to you at coffee and go, hey, is everybody considered this person? And you must have just a stack of people that are worthy. They just have to kind of wait their turn.
Well, we have more than 100 people that are waiting in the wings. We're going to induct 11 people on February 20th, and we have already backfilled more than 11 people to go forward into the next selection process.
When you say we, what's the whole process? How do you get number one, or how do you get somebody there?
Well, first of all, it takes a nomination from someone in the public. And anyone in the public can make a nomination to the Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame. Our nomination process can be found on our website, chautauquasportshalloffame.org, or giving us a call at the Hall of Fame or stopping in and see us. So that's the first step, is making the nomination. Then the board of directors takes over and makes the final selection process. It's a process that takes us 3 months from beginning to end.
And is there a committee that goes through and picks out a bunch of them? And then there's another committee that narrows that down to the final inductees.
That's exactly how it works, Russ. Awesome. We've got half the board goes through all 100 people and narrows that list down. And then the other half of the board goes through what they've chosen and narrows that down again. And then the entire board gets together and narrows it down to the final selection process.
And it's just not Joe Blow says, right, puts it on a paper, Joe Blow, and sends it in to you. There's a lot of material comes with it, isn't it? There's so much post-journal material that are in those scrapbooks and the things that you get to look through. Yeah, so it's not what somebody said about somebody. It's what somebody has performed, and you have backing up for that, don't you?
We require documentation for each nominee. And not just a little bit of documentation, we require a lot of documentation. It's when someone finally gets chosen, like Jay and Scott, it's because they deserve it. Mm-hmm. We want to get it right every year, and I think we've got a very good track record of doing that.
Well, what's a good feeling sitting here and then and every year after when the committee had got together and we talked about doing what was happening, so we come up with the idea and a lot of people. And I'd take another 3 hours, if we have it, to talk about those people, but we'll save that. But what is happening today is the dream that we had sitting around that table, the Hall of Fame today and just previously, has made it come true.
When did that dream for you, Scott, begin? I mean, when did you decide, Scott Kinberg, that, you know, I want to be a sports editor someday?
Well, I don't know if I envision being a sports editor, but I think it was established when I was a kid. My dad, I was never an athlete. I mean, I played sports, youth sports, but I knew I was never going to be good enough to make a varsity team. So that was pretty apparent early on. So I just enjoyed reading, and that led to enjoy writing. When I was in high school, probably was when I realized that was something that I wanted to pursue. Ironically enough, I had a teacher in school who predicted that I would not succeed. And I think maybe Jay might be able to relate to this, or any of us here, that when somebody tells you you can't, you want to prove to them that you can. And so I guess from my earliest memory, that was always on the radar. And then I came ever so close, though, however, to joining my family's business, which is at Lynn Funeral Home. And about a month before I was scheduled to go to mortuary science school, I told my uncle, I said, you know what? I said, it's not for me. So I shifted gears while I was at entering my second year at JCC, and then went on to Point Park University in Pittsburgh. So it was always on the radar. But I wasn't sure until probably after I graduated from high school that, yeah, that was the direction I wanted to go. And fortunately, I had already had a personal friendship with Jim Riggs. So I went and spoke with him, and that was in March of 1983.
I would have thought you would have followed your father to Third Main.
Well, those would have been huge shoes to fill there at Third and Main. My dad, directing traffic, there was only one that could do it like him. So, yeah.
and the years going back to the Jamestown Falcons as an usher at the stadium.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think my dad's interest and love for sport was probably the helped me along to decide what I wanted to do for a career. And honestly, it really hasn't felt like work. You know, I always look forward to going to find it or go to into the office every night or going out to cover stuff. And then the best part is the relationships. That's the thing. I mean, with Jay, for example, and his whole family, that's just one of the huge benefits, and it's been great. And I like Jay alluded to, we live in a community that, in the county, that is, I mean, the friendships that have been made and the memories that have been made have mm-hmm. been awesome. And,
well, there's a lot of refrigerators in our area that have your stories hanging on.
It's well put, Russ. I mean, yeah. Think about that.
Well, and that's like we talked before we went on the air. If we fail to acknowledge that what's happening locally, the way the our businesses, we would fail, because we all have cell phones, and you can get that information, the score, instantly. So it's important that we acknowledge the accomplishment of our local residents. And, you know, if you're looking for national news, you might have to go to another forum to get it.
Mm-hmm. Jay, I thought that comes with me when I think about what you guys do. There's things on the athletic complexes, whether they be a football field, a baseball field, basketball court, a swimming pool, that a young person can learn a lesson that he just cannot learn in the classroom. There's a lot to that, and it's wonderful that the schools put together these athletic programs and have coaching or something, and a lot of things that the young people learn. And I have that same feeling about officials in the younger generations. For many times, that's their first run-in or their first exposure, better, to law enforcement. You're right, you're wrong, you're yes, you're no. And it's where they really learn it, and it really follows them through life. So the officials play a major, major role in the development of a youngster, don't they?
Yeah, you know, I've never thought of it in those terms, to be honest with you. My time in sports and growing up in sports, you know, sports, it brings you way up and it takes you way down, right? So you just have to be able to handle those highs and lows. I mean, so I think what sports does is it teaches you perseverance and it teaches you bounce back. Because if you don't bounce back from, I mean, you're going to make mistakes. There's no coach goes in a game or player goes in a game thinking, I'm not going to miss any shots or I'm not going to throw an incomplete. It's going to happen. So it's not whether it's going to happen. It's how you're going to react when it happens. And I think that, you know, everybody says, and I know it's cliche to say that sports and life, right? But it is. I mean, it's things are going to go wrong. How are you going to respond to that? You're going to fight through it and handle the things that you can handle and keep persevering. You know, and then you talk about officials. And I know, you know, it's tough being official. I watch how officials are treated now, and it's really difficult. And I think something's got to change somewhere for us to get more officials on the courts and on the fields. Mm. Listen, you guys all know there are some outstanding officials in the stands every single game.
Every game.
They can make calls from the top of the – I mean, it's unbelievable. If we can just get some of those people on, like taking the classes and then getting trained into doing – like just that – we need to get younger people, honestly, into officiating. And I think that there has been some initiatives. I know that JCC has talked about doing some officiating classes with the college-age students. And I know we have some young officials football-wise, because I deal with football officials quite extensively, you know, with Section 6. And if we get younger people in there, that's going to keep – you know, replenishing the cupboard, if you will, of the officials. But I'm telling you, if we don't get more officials, you're going to see less games, because they can't play games without officials. And I don't think parents and ADs and coaches realize this, but this is coming. That in a couple of years, if there's not officials to do these games, you're going to see the less games being played because they can't cover them all.
Well, I can help you with that. You're saying you're short officials, but you did hit a little bit. You come to one of the skunk games this summer when we have about, we might have 2,000 people in the stadium. You've got 2,000 officials, so you can go down there. There's officials running all over.
Oh, I know. And I'm guilty of that too when I go to games. You know, I'm standing at I'll go to the Eagles game this week. You know, they play the Giants on Saturday night, and I'm going to be up, you know, in the stands, and I'll see every call. And I'll yell out. You know who sees every call too? My dad. I guess his eyesight has gotten better now that he's 75 and he sees every call from the day. But listen, that's just the nature of sports.
Now, in all your coaching and everything, what avenue do you travel on the most? I remember with Al Ayers, was our baseball coach for when I was in high school, and he used to tell us, now, remember, they can't beat us if they can't score. And the defensive end of baseball was the home run hitter to have on your team was wonderful. But the guy that stopped the other team from hitting home runs, or the team that stopped them from, he says, what wins the ball game?
Well, I mean, that's, it's genius, right? You can't argue it.
Yeah.
It depends on the sport, I guess. But what do they all say? What's the old saying? Like, offense sells tickets, defense wins championships. Mm. I mean, yeah. But I think of it in terms of maybe basketball and football, and I just think complementary. Like, a good football team plays complementary football. Yeah. You know, your defense is making the stops that they have to. Offense is sustaining drives. It all works together because it's all a team, right? So, no, it's just another one of those. I mean, we could sit here all day talking about old sports sayings. That would be great.
Now, the other thing I want to ask you is a personal thing. So you can put your hand over the microphone if you don't want to answer it.
I'll answer any question you ask.
Where did the name Jay come from? Was it in the family name?
Actually, it's the initial of my middle name. So I have an older brother, Mike, who got it. He was inducted last year, and he's a coach at Washington Jefferson College. So he's my older brother, and when he was born, they named him Mike. Right? They like the name Mike. I don't know. It was 1972. Isn't that like the number one name for like 15 straight years? So then I came along a couple of years later, and they named me after my dad. So I'm named after my dad. I don't know why they didn't go with the first son. Maybe they went with the middle son because we don't get anything, right? The middle child, right? So anyway, so my name is Francis Joseph Sirianni III. That's a long Francis Joseph Sirianni III, and they just started calling me Jay, and that's where that came from. So I'm named after my dad, who he's named after his dad. So I'm pretty proud of that.
The best
family
thing
name
ever happened to me was I was named after my dad. I'm glad to be part of it.
Yeah,
with you.
Yeah. And then I had a son, and we did not name him after him, but no, and that was between my wife and that was like a lot of pressure on me. Like then I have a son, and it's like, all right, what do we? I got my father-in-law. We kind of put names together, and his name's Joey. So he's my middle name.
And I hear the name often as Sirianni in our family when our family gets together. Craig Underwood.
Okay.
Was at Southwestern.
He did a lot of coaching at Southwestern. Yeah.
He was a teacher there. He went through the military in a submarine.
He was in the movie Hunt for Red October. Mm-hmm. He told me that once that he. Mm-hmm. He's not like, you can't see him. He was on the sub that was in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So anyway, I don't know. Days of Our Lives, right? So we got a guy living in Jamestown that was in the movie Hunt for Red October.
That avenue he was on all took him to Southwestern.
Yeah, I think he said at one point, he told me, Craig Underwood was his name. He coached for a long time and taught for a long time. I think he told me at one point, like he added up all the time that he spent on a submarine. And for 7 years, he was submerged in water. Like it's remarkable.
Wow.
Well, there was one time, I think it was, he told us in a family, it was 6 months. They were underwater. They come up a couple times at night, and he was on one of those nuclear subs.
Yeah.
And
get him on the show.
Yeah. I'm making mental note. Jeez.
He probably can't talk about any of that stuff.
Probably
nuclear subs. Yeah.
His father went through the military and the Navy and the Air Force for a career, and he followed him.
Scott Kinberg, over to you. One thing people don't think about when it's in media, and specifically when you're a sports journalist, is the hours you work. And I mean,
my wife should be on here.
I was about, well, that's what I'm kind of, this is where I'm going. You must say, in all honesty, you would not be able to be as successful as you are without that family support over the years to say, listen, I'm going to have to miss some birthdays. I'm going to have to miss, Thanksgiving weekend. I've got to go on the road. And for every year you kind of plan this. So the life of a sports reporter really is, its own ESPN 30 for 30 type thing.
Well, it's much like, Jay with coaching and all the coaches that, devote their time to whatever sport they're involved in. If you want to be successful, you've got to, you have to work at it. It's not something you can roll the balls out at the start of a sports season, it's a 12-month commitment. Well, we follow what the sports teams do, and we don't have bankers' hours. I mean, the games are all played nights, weekends, and honestly, in 40 years, I've only worked nights. I 6 to 2 in the morning, sometimes later. But yeah, what's ironic is I told you I was gonna thought in my early years that I'd become a funeral director. Mm-hmm. Well, I decided I didn't want to work at that time 18 hours a day. Well, guess what? That's ultimately sometimes what happens. But that's just the nature of the business, and it's never been a job. My wife, to her credit, I'll tell you this short story. In 2009, at Thanksgiving time, Randolph was going to play in the Carrier Dome for state championship, and in the wee hours of Thanksgiving morning, or maybe it was the next day, but it was the wee out. I was going to be leaving around noon for Syracuse that next morning. While my mother-in-law passed away over in the wee hours, so I told Vicky, I said, "Well, listen, I'm called Jim Riggs, and we'll make arrangements to have somebody else go to Syracuse." And she goes, "No." I go, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Well, there's nothing that you can do in the next 24, 36 hours. And she said, "And those Randolph boys want you there."
Amen.
And so, I mean, she deserves all the credit. I mean, it's not easy, at times, because, like you said, there's things that you miss or, but that's the way it works with really any job, but especially in sports, just because we don't have the traditional hours. They're not, my day starts when everybody's coming home and putting their feet up. That's just the reality. And that happened. I mean, it's not just in Jamestown. It's everywhere in the media, as you know. I mean, it all happens at unique times. But like I said, this has been a real pleasure for me the last 40 years, but it wouldn't have happened without support from many
folks. It's a team affair.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, Jay, your wife is very involved in sports as well. Why don't you give her a little bit of credit? And while you're doing that, I want to know, what's it like to be the assistant coach to your wife?
All right, so my wife.
At home and at school.
When's this going to be on air? Because I'm going to keep her off. Okay. My wife, Kay Beaver, she's from Randolph, played a lot of sports, went to JCC, was actually voted number one athlete of JCC of all time when they did that. What was that, like 20 years ago?
It was the first
50 years.
First 50 years, the top athlete was Kay Beaver Sirianni.
Wow. So now she is the head girls basketball coach at Southwestern. She was before we had kids, and when my daughter was born, that's when she took some time off. Now she's back, and I'm her assistant coach. I'm an unpaid volunteer assistant coach that, it's just kind of funny. We show up at games and the officials look at me and they're like, "Mom, we know you're not going to say much today." She's right. And they're right. They're like, "Yeah, I got to sit here and she can yell at me and she's going to yell at you." And, but honestly, it's really, I'll be honest. It's stressful. All right. Cause you leave practice and you go home and it's still with you. But the fact that my daughter's on the team, my youngest daughter, Gianna, is in fifth grade and she's the manager. My son Joey is in eighth grade. He's playing middle school basketball, which I'm the coach of that team too. But we're together all the time, and as much as sometimes, it's stressful and there's some arguing and this and that family, we're together like all the time, our family. And I know it's not going to be like this for a long time, forever, because they're going to grow up and go their ways, but we're enjoying the moment. And Kay does a great job. She is much more calm than me. So we balance each other out very, very well. And it's definitely interesting.
Who's got the better jump shot? You or Kay?
Oh, no doubt I shoot better. She listen, she'll come on air and say that. She's a better player. She'd probably take me to the hoop. But no doubt. I'll beat her in a shooting contest anytime.
What's it like playing for your parents? I'm thinking of kids who have to play for their parents. You had to play for your dad. What's it like to have to play for your parent and then ride home in the car with them afterwards?
Oh, okay. Well, let me tell you a story. We lived a mile away from school, so we didn't always ride home in the car with dad. Sometimes we had to walk home or run home. Now, he used to do that to Nick, and he was like, Nick, it's your cool down, run home. So Nick would have to run home. I've had a chance to talk to a lot of coaches in the past about how that dynamic was. I remember the awesome coach, you guys probably remember, Gene Tundo from Orchard Park. Now, Gene had his son played at OP, and he coached his son, and his son was good. Like, they won a state championship, and he was a Division I lacrosse player. And but Gene got so much, like, there was so much pressure put on him from the community, and you know, it was really hard for his family. There was a lot of negativity towards him, and I just couldn't understand that. Like, I didn't get it. You know, now, I'm not saying that that's the same. I just know how hard that was for Gene. Now that I'm in that position, I realize how hard it is to coach your own kid. And it's not from the outside. It's from the inside that my daughter can't ever get away from us. Like, she goes home and coaches are still there. So there has to be that. You got to turn it off from being coach to a parent. You know, Russ said, am I coaching at home? And I try not to. I try to be a parent at home and a coach when it's I need to be coach at practice. So I think if you have that balance, it definitely helps. I will say this. It is hard being coached by your parent because if you have to do everything right in order for your parent, who is the coach, to correct other kids, they have to be able to correct you first. Hmm. So I think that's hard. And I went through that. And now that I'm coaching my own kids, it's also hard to coach your own kids too. But it's still pretty awesome. I mean, it is, right? I mean, Mike knows this. My brother Nick, my brother Mike, they both know this. You know, it's funny because I was at training camp this summer, and I just happened to be in a conversation with Jalen Hurts, and he was coached by his dad, and he talks about it. And I was like, you know, yeah, it was hard. We kind of had that same conversation, and I said, Jalen, you know, as hard as it is being coached by your parent, it's just as hard coaching your kid. So, you know, you haven't experienced that yet, but you might. You know, in the future. So, believe me, I know I'm saying that it's hard and it's difficult, but it's awesome. I mean, it's awesome because of the time we get to spend together. So there has to be that balance, but it is pretty cool.
Jay's got the word balance strikes me because he had an incredible run with his Southwestern football team. 2008, they win a state championship. 2009, they win a state championship. Mm. And 2011, they get to the state final. But what I'll remember forever, I mean, that was a great run. They won like 35 straight games at one point.
It was 38.
But who's counting?
Excuse me. And so, but the game that broke that streak was then Ralph Wilson Stadium. They lost to Fredonia. And so after the game, there was two things that I remember. One is immediately after the game, or when the game was over and Fredonia kids are rightfully celebrating their sectional championship, I look over to other part of the field, and there's one of Jay's players. His name's Jake Curry. And he went and found one of Greg Sherlock's boys who was a member of the Fredonia team to congratulate him. And here, mm-hmm. Southwestern had just had their winning streak snapped, their tremendous run, for three seasons. And he took the time to greet and congratulate. I mean, the ultimate sportsmanship. So then I go up the tunnel, and ultimately find Jay in the locker room. And I said, man, I said, I'm sorry I have to do this and ask some questions about the tough loss. Because it was a close game. They scored in the final minute, I think. And Jay looked at me and he goes, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this guy has it. I mean, I know inside he was probably, you know, devastated that that lost because, you know, competitive and you want to keep it going. But he's always had the right perspective. And that example of one of his players reaching out to an opponent that he battled. And it, I mean, I'll always remember that. And I remember sending a message to his parents on Facebook, Dave and Tina Curry. I said, I've never seen that ever. And, you know, that's just a reflection of the, you know, the coach and the environment that, you know, Jay fostered. And so it's, you know, we always, you know, sports writers, fans, coaches, players, we always look at the final score. But, you know, there's more to it, you know, behind the scenes.
Yeah. I mean, it, when you win, I mean, the character is revealed when you lose. Right. I mean, that's, I've always been taught that. And it's, I mean, it's true. It's true. How are you going to respond? That's going back to Russ, to what we said before. What's the bounce back? Because you're going to lose games, right? Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm not going to lie. Thanks for telling that story, Scott, because it brings up memories of losing that game. That was a hard game to lose. Like, I'm not. That's
You learn lessons in the game you lost.
You know, I think you wrote about that, like, recently, within the last year. I think it's, somewhere.
I remember when thing, yeah.
And I remember saying to one of my, you know, coaches that I coached with, I think it was Kevin Salisbury, you know, and that you wrote about, I think, like, within, like I said, within the last year. And I said, you know, that's what I'm most proud of is that, you know, what Jake did, you know, because we lost and it hurt. And, but hey, we came back the next year and we're going to play more games. I mean, it's just, yeah. So, yeah, that's sports.
Yep.
Scott, you've written 10 books in your lifetime. You've won 14 Associated Press awards for writing. Do you have a top two, three, four subjects that you've written about?
Oh, boy. I hadn't prepared mentally for that question ahead of time. But, well, I guess one that immediately comes to mind, Michael Heary from Fredonia. He was one of the best basketball players this county's ever had. He went on to play at the Naval Academy, is in their top 10 all-time scorers. And again, it was relationship that was built back when he was in high school, and now I'm friends with the whole Heary clan. But, and it's fitting that, you know, you brought that question up because it was exactly this time of year. At that time in the mid-90s, I was covering, early 90s, I was covering the Bills. I did that for 15 years, and that was during their Super Bowl runs. And I had covered a Super Bowl the year before in when the Bills lost to the Redskins in Minneapolis. I covered games home and away that entire season, and I was told just after or just before the AFC Championship game that I was not going to be going to the Super Bowl if the Bills won that game. Well, when I found that news out, was the same day that I was scheduled to go meet Mike Heary and his coach and fellow Chautauqua Sports Hall of Fame inductee, Dave Polchetti, at Fredonia High School. And I almost called and said, I'm not going. Because I was just, I was being selfish, but I was like, man, I am not into this. But I said, well, I made a promise, I'm going to go. So anyway, that's the prelude to an interview that I had with Mike and Dave in a empty study hall at Fredonia High School. And at the time, Michael's dad, who was a principal at Fredonia, he was battling leukemia. And ultimately, several days before, Tom Heary had passed away. And here's Michael at 16 or 17 years old sitting there telling me about his relationship with his dad and how they, you know, they had a pregame ritual of, or maybe it was postgame ritual, going to McDonald's after the game and sitting there, father and son talking about the game and how his dad was a great basketball player at Canisius back in the day. Anyway, so we get to the end of the interview after he's telling me this story about his love for his dad. And Dave Polchetti says, do you want to tell Scott what happened at the end? I'm going, at the end? What's that all about? And Mike said, sure, coach. So he tells me about the last moments he had with his dad in the hospital. And he said, and here I am, like, I'm almost ready to cry myself. And he goes, he had all these monitors, and he saw that the one that monitored his heart rate, or maybe it was respiration, I'm not sure. Anyway, it jumped from 0 to 24 three times. And on the third time, he passed. But Mike Heary's uniform number at Fredonia was 24.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to look out the window,
wow,
biting my tongue in the inside of my cheek to keep from breaking down. And here I'm thinking, we got done, and I'm driving back to Jamestown, and it's like, man, I'm being so selfish. I'm all upset because I'm not going to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And here a 16-year-old, 17-year-old provided me with a life altering, realizing that, or story that what's truly important. And so if you're asking me, that one I always tell because it adds perspective on what things are truly important in life. So, yeah.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. How do you go through these interviews and these writing the stories? One thing that would this seem impossible, but I don't see it in you, is that when you're sitting and you're talking with somebody and then you go down on the typewriter, it doesn't suddenly become, you don't flow your, it's all about what was coming into you. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't flow and you don't editorialize what the other person was telling you. How did you learn to do that mm-hmm. so well?
Well, it's like, you know, Coach Sirianni here, you just practice it. You know, you don't, you know, it's not something that, you know, I guess some of it is, I got to credit my teachers and my folks for encouraging reading and, you know, but it's just something you have to do. It's like anything. You got to, Andrew, you know, in his career here in radio, ooh, yes. I mean, you can't just suddenly have a microphone in front of you or, you know, broadcasting hockey games and doing all that. I mean, you can't just do it once and then, okay, I'm going to put it aside for, you know, years and okay, I'll do it again. If you don't practice it, you're not going to be good at it. And, you know, Jay's the same way. You know, it's something you have to keep working at every day. And so,
the late Jim Roselli told me several times that many times he gave the microphone and never got it back.
Jay, you've coached football, basketball, track and field, and maybe some other ones that don't come into my head at the moment. But do you have a favorite sport? And
youth
why?
Soccer, Randy. Youth soccer. Oh, when I coached my kids, all we did was just
Pele.
I said to those kids was just fire the shots at the goalie. Just shoot it every. No,
no defense on that team.
I will say that was coaching youth soccer was fun. It was fun, but there's nothing like football. I mean, for those who have played football and been around football, there's just nothing like football to me is the ultimate team sport. In a game of basketball, we've all watched Jordan play. You have seen not just great teams, but you could see one person dominate, right? And you can see that in some sport. You don't see that in football. You know, one person still needs to have, whether your quarterback is really good, they still need the line doing their job. Like I said before in the beginning of the interview, it's all about complementary football. It's about the offense helping the defense and so on and special teams. There's nothing like football.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, again, it takes you up, it takes you down. I'm not going to lie. Like, I will be a nervous wreck this entire week thinking about the Eagles-Giants game. Just because, you know, you're fans too. You just want to win. So the Bills fans, you know, Bills-Bengals this week is just going to be fantastic. And how much emotion is going to be in that game? That's what football brings. Just emotion from the fans, from the players, from the coaches. There's so much strategy involved. There's so much when you're game planning a football game, even in high school, and you're watching film and you're finding those weaknesses in the defense that you can exploit. I mean, it's just, it's fantastic. I miss coaching football. I mean, people, we had a good run.
You ever stepped away, Jay?
We had a good run, and I'm, you know, yeah. So.
Jay, did you ever have the feeling with all your years of coaching that the Little League, the Babe Ruth League, the midget football, the youth soccer program, the youth swimming program, all of those youth activity kind of programs, weren't they a very fine beginning and almost like a minor league getting these young players and then they coming on into the school program?
Yeah.
A lot of good happens in those programs that are out there. And
yeah, just get kids involved. Just being involved, right? And being involved on a team, you know, so... that I don't think you should be in any rush to like push your kids into sports right away. They'll do it when they're ready. And I don't think as a young kid, you should specialize. I mean, that's you play as many sports as you can. I mean, that's just fun. It should be fun, right? Sports should be fun, for kids and play as many as you possibly can. And, I want to throw this out here for Scott. So, you know, the situation that Nick is in and my entire family was kind of thrown in about 2 years ago when Nick got the head coaching job in Philadelphia. You know, it was interesting because the media wanted to interview like everybody that knew Nick and like had a cup of coffee or Nick or whatever. And we kind of just handed things over to Scott. Like Scott became like the spokesperson for the Sirianni family out of this area. And, you know, because he's such a good reporter, right? And he's a local reporter. And, you know, I think that's pretty cool that you were able to do that. And we as a family, thank you for doing that.
Well, it was my pleasure.
But, you know, you got access to Nick now, so you can... I don't know if you have to go through the Eagles anymore. You just go through Nick.
Well, I text him after every or before every game and I wish him luck. And then and the rare occasions that they don't get the outcome they want, I don't text him after that because I figure he doesn't want, you know, me to, you know, he just needs to, you know, decompress after that. But it's been a real pleasure. The Sirianni family's been awesome. It's, you know, heck, I've known him for 40 years.
Right.
It's pretty cool that we even had a guy from The Athletic, the sports website that subscription only, and Zach Berman is the beat writer for The Athletic for the Eagles. And a couple summers ago, he came to Jamestown, and so I chauffeured him around town to various haunts that including Johnny's Lunch. Took him to see Jay at school.
Yeah.
And the track that's named after Fran Sirianni. And he had a great time.
You even brought him to the Hall of Fame.
I did. And that was really fun. And I think, you know, Zach, obviously, like all of the journalists, we have to play middle of the road. But I think if he was put on the witness stand, he would say how much he enjoys... you know, the whole Sirianni family, but I think he really likes Nick personally. You know, there may be things that he has to write that that maybe Nick might not be a fan of, depending on the circumstance. But it was clear that Zach Berman thought this was a pretty special place and with a pretty special family.
Randy Anderson, we only have a few minutes left here in the times of your life. And, you know, we were able to secure two amazing, I mean, spokesman, you know, for sports and the love of sports and for the Hall of Fame coming up. And I do want to give you the moment here to recognize the other inductees that weren't able to join us.
The other inductees are Bob Barlett, the great track and football star from Dunkirk High School, who went on to play at UB and also Syracuse. Sheldon Battle, the tremendous track and field performer for Jamestown High School, a pretty good football player as well, who went on to become an All-American in shot and discus at the University of Kansas. Kirsten Green, the assistant athletic director at Harvard University. That's pretty high up the food chain there. David Hinson, a great football star and track star at JHS, who now is an director of amateur scouting for the Kansas City Chiefs. So I'm sure Jay and his brother Nick are going to run into David at some point. Hopefully not this year. I'm down on the Chiefs. Sorry, David. Frank Jagoda, who is the all-time winningest baseball coach in the history of the Dunkirk Public Schools. Bruce Johnson, the outstanding swim coach from Frewsburg. Jay, you'll appreciate this. Bruce has won 900 and some swim meets. Can you imagine that? 900. Those are the ones that's he won.
Right.
It's crazy. Just a tremendous coach. Fred Larson from Fredonia Central School, outstanding cross-country and track and field man. Marty Nichols from Casadega, who has been the wrestling coach at Ithaca College for over a couple of decades. Marty has coached 10 NCAA champions and like over 80 All-Americans at Ithaca College. Here's a young boy from St. Clairville, New York. And our final inductee is Amy King Swanson, outstanding track and field and basketball player at Clymer, who went on to set all the program records at Damon College for basketball.
And folks want to get their tickets for the program?
Yes, tickets are available by calling Chip Johnson, 485-6991. They're also available down at the Jock Shop. They're also available at the Sports Hall of Fame, and as well as our online location at StockwaSportsHallOfFame.org.
Randy, thank you for organizing this, as always. Jay Sirianni, Scott Kenberg, thank you so much for joining us here in the Times of Your Life. Congratulations on all your success and continued success, because we know you guys aren't going anywhere.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you very much. This has been the Times of Your Life on WJTN Jamestown.